All right, everybody, we're live. You're listening to the Shepherd Ambella Show. Live on YouTube and Rumble every single day, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. Today, we got a great guest with us. We're going to have Marshall Masters joining us. He's going to get into his latest work. He's also going to be talking about the Japanese earthquake and all sorts of stuff we're going to get into. We're going to take callers later in the show. Marshall Masters, welcome.
Hey.
It's a pleasure to have you. We were almost inundated with technical problems at the beginning here, and the stream did not want to go live, but we're live now, so we can get into it.
I know smoke them if you got them.
Yeah, I know you mentioned the Japanese earthquake, and you know, they recently, there was a quake in LA, a 4 point something on the Richter scale, and it kind of jolted. There were some videos where it kind of really jolted all of a sudden, like a sudden drop off a ledge or something. It was, pretty wild. But what was up with the thing in Japan?
Well, in Japan, this was a first ever mega quake warning. By the way, I'm getting feedback. Are you hearing feedback?
I wonder if my setting is... do you have headphones on? You have to have headphones on.
Okay.
That might be it. I'll give you a minute to get your headphones on. These earthquakes, you know, obviously the Ring of Fire, it's heating up, starting to activate. There's been activity in Oregon. Mount St. Helens has had some recent activity. I know they were talking about also the geyser, one of the geysers at Yellowstone recently kind of spouted off on people. People had to run for their lives. Basically, all this mud blew up in the air about a quarter mile, shot about a quarter mile in distance or more. And, it really got to the point of where, you know, I'm almost questioning, like, how much time does Yellowstone have? Because there was people that came out, Michio Kaku and others, and a whole group of scientists came out early on. It was like 2 years back. And they said, look, they said in 2024, we are going to see all sorts of details emerge with the Yellowstone volcano. And they were saying, oh, well, you know, there could be an imminent eruption in 2024 is the year. But then these reports got scrubbed back, and I haven't seen them at all. We're still waiting. Marshall's going to get his headphones ready.
I think I'm good.
All right, brother. I was just talking about the Yellowstone volcano and how the Ring of Fire has been heating up, and
yes,
Michio Kaku and others. There was actually this whole group of scientists. They came forward and they were saying 2024 is the year that Yellowstone's going to erupt. But then I went back and tried to look for these reports, recently, and it's like they've been scrubbed, and I can't.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you have NASA wanting to mitigate the Yellowstone volcano and whatnot. But what's the deal with the Japanese earthquake?
The thing with the Japanese earthquake, and I sent in the chat room.
Uh huh.
And I'm still hearing myself coming back, so it's on your side. And you're getting a.
What about now?
Let's see how this is.
Did that do anything for a second?
Well, let's see how it goes. I'm hearing a little bit, but not as much as before.
Okay. Huh. Weird. I haven't had a guest on in a while, and I think I got some setting crossed up or something. So I'll have to check into that a little more. Sorry about that, Marshall.
Oh, hey, it's radio. Don't worry about it.
It's always something. Yeah.
If you're not hearing it, I'll just live with it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's hearing it. Somehow you are. So sorry, I apologize.
Right. I don't, it's just technology. But here's the thing about this 7.1 in Japan that I'm concerned about is a 7.1 is a significant, that's a big quake. All right.
Right.
But what? If you look at this article link, Japan issues first ever mega quake warning. And they are, you ought to see the map and where the epicenter of the quake is. It's offshore. This thing goes off. And they have a mega quake there. It's not going to be nice for the Japanese, that's for sure.
Well, I know the Japanese stock market recently had some issues, and it kind of like trickled into the U.S. economy a little bit. Do you think, because like, you know, I heard people are really worried about this thing because the government actually like made an announcement and everything. They told people like don't panic buy because of this earthquake. You know, they basically said there's mega quake fears, and I guess everyone's like trying to panic buy, kind of like in COVID when they were getting all I mean, that's a weird situation.
Well, people are going to respond that way, but when you're saying in your official announcements that it's going to be a mega quake. That's the first time I have ever seen the use of that word by a reporting agency. It's always been an entertainment.
Yeah.
You always hear people, you know, on YouTube talking mega quake, mega quake. And you can have documentaries and all of this. But I'm talking about live reporting from a government source, and they're using that word for the first time. That needs to catch our attention. And the reason why it gets my attention is that I have an article that I posted in March called "A Catastrophic Submarine Volcano Event is Building in the Philippine Sea Area." And if you go to my site and you read that, it's quite sizable, very popular. I'm talking about a prediction of volcanism, and where this quake occurred is within the region of volcanism that was predicted for a major eruption event, which would likely be a subsea volcano. And this was in my book, Being in It for the Species, published in 2014, a prediction by Carlos, a guide. And if you go to the website and look at it, you'll see a winter of ash map in a region that shows where the guides were saying back in 2013 when we did the readings that something would happen. Well, this is smack in the middle of it. And on top of that, the thinnest part of the crust is down in the trench there in the Philippines.
Well, the Marianas or whatever?
Yeah, the Marianas Trench. It's only about 5 miles thick.
Oh,
and really? This 7.1 was not super deep. So it puts it in the area and literally in the prediction that we gave within this article, based on the work of another group, it puts a subsea eruption approximately 1,000 miles due south of where this event happened in Japan, offshore.
Oh, okay.
So it's all in this area. And what I would say is, for folks that haven't read the article, A Catastrophic Submarine Volcano Event is Building in the Philippine Sea, go to my site, youwusa.com, and read it. And you'll find it on the homepage.
Hey, that's fascinating. You know, and of course, Japan is where they had the infamous tsunami and earthquake that, you know, triggered the Fukushima nuclear power plant fiasco back in the day. So that's, you know, troublesome. That's worrisome as well, you know, knowing that all these, they have a lot of those nuclear plants on the coastline and whatnot. So, well, you know, you got an article up at Your Own World USA. The link's down below, YOWUSA. The link's in the description. And Trump's assassination Magador maneuver. You know, all the different groups, the MAGA, the Democrats, the Rhinos, the Anons had their different take on it. Of course, Q and them, all of that. And then this timeline we're in, Marshall wants to get into the 100-year war and basically what you're terming in your article, the Magador maneuver. So I'll let you jump right into it. I'm fascinated to hear your presentation, Marshall.
Well, I'm viewing events differently than most people. Mm-hmm. I'm taking it from a time jumper standpoint. When I did my book, Being In It for the Species, I worked with the guides, and we were jumping backwards and forwards in time all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway into it, my assistant, the guy that was helping me with this, we're both retired systems analysts, and he just said, "I'm lost. We have jumped backwards and forwards so often, I'm lost. What do we do?" So I just said, "Well, there's an old saying in the business, if you do it wrong, do it consistently wrong." And we just kept going on. And I said, "We're just going to finish this. Don't tell the guides. Don't tell this other wonderful lady that was helping us with it. Don't tell her. Don't tell anybody. We're just going to soldier through and see how it reconciles at the end." And we were doing that. And when we finished, it came time to organize everything for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And we then started doing readings with the guides to help them get us organized. And what we found was we were constantly losing our place in the timelines. The guides never did. Everything they told us every step of the way is absolutely perfect, on the money. And we made mistakes, and they corrected our mistakes. And when I was finished with that, it really introduced me to three-dimensional concept thinking. And when you're thinking three-dimensionally, the reason why we were getting lost is that we were jumping back and forth, and we really didn't understand that. We were just asking clarifying questions and following on leads and so forth. But we were jumping in time and space to different events, different possibilities, because we were projecting forward in time, not backward in time. So we are looking at possible events coming on. And when we were finished, I really learned a tremendous amount about approaching things three-dimensionally. And when you do that, you stop using conventional measures. It's everything is connected. And the time that it gets to another event or thought object is at the speed of thought, not at the speed of light. So if you think it, you're there. Period. So it's a whole different way of looking at things. And a couple of years ago, there was Guardians of the Looking Glass. And the Guardians of the Looking Glass came out. They're using this looking glass device in Area 51. I think you're vaguely aware of that place, right?
Yeah.
And when we got into it, we were starting to see the difference that the initial group, the initial Guardians, and then they were the group was the account was stolen. It's very easy if you try and go on YouTube and do something anonymously, it's the easiest thing to steal in the world. They can steal it from you in a heartbeat. And they just go in, they capture your login, and then they're going to change all of the information. And, you know, if you go to YouTube and say, this is mine here, and they're going to go, we don't know who you are. And that's it.
Yeah.
You're toast. And they've lost it. And the group was compromised. Well, what I was in this Magador article, what I was explaining is that I could read the difference. Mm-hmm. And I started, based on what I had learned in 2013 and here going all this time forward, and I'm going, wow, the white hats are time jumping. Because I see it in what they're doing, the evidence of it in what they're doing. Once you know what to look for, you start seeing it.
Yeah.
You start seeing it all over the place. It's easy. All right.
Now, time jumping, coming in and out of timelines, or like, what do you mean?
Exactly? Well, timelines is the word timeline is not a good word.
Okay.
And here's why. Timeline is a two-dimensional concept. Mm-hmm. And two-dimensional concepts, first off, it's a timeline. And when we say a line, we think of a perfect line. You know, draw it with a ruler. And a snap line when you're putting in a foundation in a building. And so we like lines and we like right angles. Well, the only place that perfect lines and right angles exist in nature is in the mind of a sentient being. They do not exist in nature itself. And so timeline, you start thinking about time two-dimensionally, and it's a hierarchical list. And this happens, then that happens, then that happens, then that happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, that doesn't work because we learned that. My guy JP Jones and I, we learned that in 2013 when we were doing this book. Mm-hmm. And you have to stop thinking in measured distances. Everything's connected. It's all infinite. And you get to wherever you're going by the speed of thought, backwards or forwards. And so timeline is not really, it's a useful term in two-dimensional conversation. In three-dimensional conversation.
Does that dovetail into like a simulation type theory or anything like that? The timeline aspect? Because how you were saying how it's like at the speed of thought, is that because we're kind of projecting our own reality or something like that?
No, not really. When I say, I prefer the word time stream.
Okay.
Because time is a river that does not flow backwards. And it's vast. And we're in a time stream within this river system. And everything is in motion. It's fluid.
Mm-hmm.
There are areas of the river that are calm and pleasant and other areas that'll kill you dead if you don't know what you're doing. And so what you have to do as a time jumper is the first thing is you don't get lulled into a sense of it's all going to be happy kumbaya, because all of a sudden, boom, you're going to smash into something and it's not going to be very pleasant. So you always have to be expecting something to happen. Right. And if you do, you'll be just fine as a time jumper. But the whole thing is a time jumper. Is it's your reference, three-dimensional reference. You stop using fixed associations of time, distance, speed, and so forth, because this is how we measure things in two-dimensional thinking. That's how we have to do it. In three-dimensional thinking, it's all there, baby. Mm-hmm. It's all there. Now, when you're seeing three-dimensionally, are you seeing everything? No. If you're lucky, you're seeing the tip of the iceberg, all right? But it's a pretty big iceberg with a pretty big tip. Yeah. And you're getting into it, and you find different associations and things happening. And as a result of writing this article, which is extremely popular, it's the most popular thing I've written in, I think, probably 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still going. People are really resonating with it. And what I'm working on right now is a follow-on article to that. And I'm actually going to expand more into the time jumping and explain it to people, but also use some simple techniques so that they can do it themselves. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, you don't think you don't sound like it and you don't talk like it, but you're a jumper because I see it in your work. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can be everywhere doing, you're all over the place, and then boom, you come back to it. And a lot of people do this, but they're not really aware that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about time jumping is it's, you know, a good way to explain it is people who have dreams, visions, and premonitions about earthquakes, floods, tsunamis. I've been listening to these people for golly going on 25 years. All right. And it is what they don't understand is that in order to have the experiences, they had to jump, because they're always seeing something in the future, and they see it occurring in a place that may or may not be familiar to them.
Right.
But it's in a future that is in another time and place.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't say, I can get out of calendar. Everybody wants to get out of calendar and say, tell me when. So that's when you know to max out your credit cards before the guacamole hits the fan, right?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Like, leave MasterCard holding it. You know, who cares?
Yeah.
It's not going to work well for you. If you're doing that, that's not the thinking. But
yeah,
with three-dimensional, and I'll just explain it to you, there's a lot of it, but there's essentially four simple concepts that I'm working into this new article, because I am actually going to show people how to use it based on a concept that is a foundation principle in our Constitution.
Okay.
And with links to the founding fathers, and this, it's a time event. So when you're doing this, you're looking for a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And triggers they're neutral, but they're anything that can cause a human event. So I'm only tracking human events, not natural events with this.
Okay.
And with a human event, it's going
like a historical event that happened to someone
event could be going to dinner with the family to celebrate a new job. Okay. And it could be World War III. An event is an event. It has to affect people, has to have a human effect, has to be memorable or even life altering. All right.
Okay.
And events, it depends on the scope of the event. That's how much effect is going on. Mm-hmm. Because of an event will be, you have a trigger. A trigger will create the event.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that in time and space. But mm-hmm. if it is a large event, it becomes a propagating event, and it starts to spin off other triggers that in turn trigger off other events, and it can propagate in a wide range. It just spreads out.
Okay.
Right? And it moves through time, through place, dimension. It's really interesting the way it jumps around.
Yeah.
And then another thing I'm going to talk about is what I call threads.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the term thread. I kind of adopt it from when we're in social media platforms and having a conversation about something. And so it's a thread. It's a continuing conversation about the same thing.
Yeah.
Typically. Well, I'm borrowing the word because here it's really a meta link thread. And with a thread in this model, it is an attribute, behavior, or characteristic that can be identified. So you could have a series of related events, and then there could be one or more, any number of threads. Threads are multidimensional, and they're I call them also call them floaters, okay, because they're like pollen in the air, and pollen is the air is casting it about, and the pollen is seeking to deposit its seed in a receptive pistil, and so there's procreation of the plant. And that is what triggers do. They float like pollen, and they find a place where they connect, resonate, and something comes out of it. And so you can, once you start doing all of your stuff, you start finding your events, but then you start finding threads that are connecting events, and they could connect you with other events you didn't see in another way. So it's a very useful way to look at it. And then the final thing is, this is a time construct. How do you get into your construct? Where's your entry point? And also, where's your reference point? If you're in the construct and you get lost, where do you go back to so that you don't have to go all the way out? You can just find a point of reference. And so I call that a spot, a single point of truth. All right. Okay. Now, in this article I'm writing, the spot is going to be called consent of the governed.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting principle, and it drives everything. And it goes to what we're talking about in the Magador article, and this is going to carry on. And so you use a spot, you build your constructs with events, triggers, and threads, and you use your spots as your entry and exit points, and also interior reference points.
Okay.
A good way to think about it is, you know, when you're flying and they have the magazine in the back of the seat, and at the end, it always has that big color, you know, map, world map of all of the flights. So the hub and spoke system of the airline and where it flies to, you know, and it's, you have these lines, they're jumping all over the place, right? And that's really more of what it's like when you're time jumping. It's more like being in a hub and spoke system than anything else.
Wow.
That's the way to look at it.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is, and the only reason why I'm really talking about this, because it would be arcane in other circumstances, but a few things have happened. I'm working on this stuff, and I've been playing with these AI assisted answer engines, you know, like ChatGPT and all that. Microsoft has them, you know, people are out there, they're floating their versions. I have found if it depends on the Google database, the index, and it's a Google driven application.
Yeah, I hate Google.
Well, here's a sample conversation with Google. Google, what is Planet X? The AI comes back and says, "Oh my God, you're one of those." And you go,
"Oh yeah,
I'm one of those. What?" And the AI comes back and says, "I am not programmed to assist village idiots. Kindly return to your village. Goodbye." Yeah. And that's it, you know. So that to me is Google AI. It's all weaponized. It's all politicized.
Yeah.
As I was evaluating these tools, the one that I came upon that I really like and I'm using is perplexity.ai.
Okay.
And what I'm going to do in this article, I like Perplexity for one huge reason. They will not source Google. They went to their own discrete search index sources, and they said, if you're with Google, you got tons of garbage.
Yeah.
We don't have all the garbage. We don't have all the volume, but what we do have is quality, baby. And they do. It's a very quality database that they pull on. And they give you citations. It's a much better platform for doing research. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing in this article, this follow-up to the Magador article, and I know it's technical. And technical articles don't do that well generally because people, their eyes start rolling up, you know, like, triggers and events and whatever. But I'm going to create a strategy for diggers, guys like you, okay, who dig. You're always dig. You can't stop yourself. You're like a hog going for a truffle, baby.
Yeah.
All right. And it's just your nature. You can't stop yourself. So I'm thinking to myself, I got, there's Anons, there's diggers, there's truth seekers, there's patriots. And I can show them how to use Perplexity to reconstruct history and context and relationships. And it's really important because I have lived to see what Google has done to knowledge on the planet. And they have just taken a big 20-year shit on it. All right?
Oh, yeah.
It's awful. I remember when Google first came out, it was like, the bomb. It was wonderful. Oh my God, you put in a search question and you would just get a cornucopia of stuff from big sites and little sites. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then it was like, we got to sell something, we got to make money, and we got to take care of the communist pedophiles who run the world. And so there was a, in the 20th century, when I was in the computer business, there's an expression, and it's a very in software development. All right. It's an axiom. GIGO, G-I-G-O, stands for garbage in, garbage out. You put garbage into a computer, you're going to get garbage.
All right. Remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Ooh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Jetty or computer. The 21st century version of that is Google in, garbage out. And because what I see, especially when I'm working with these AI-assisted answer engines, is they're working with corrupted indexes that have been politicized and weaponized.
All right.
But on top of that, even when I'm looking at Perplexity, they have to work. There is so much dross, so much propaganda out there.
Yeah.
And it's sickening. And there's really no way to have an intelligent search when everything's politicized for the normies. And that's the reason why garbage, you know, Google in, garbage out. And however, there's a, what I'm going to be talking about is a way to work around that and use perplexity. And what got me to do this, to sideline, is a recent ruling this week in the case U.S. versus Google.
Oh, okay.
And in the District of Columbia, no less, you know, the heartland of the American Communist movement, a judge actually found Google is a monopoly and it's doing things illegally.
Okay. And
the judge's decision was really insightful and it was brilliant. It targeted one thing. It was unquestionable. Some things it said, okay, I'm not going to get into that. But here was the one thing that they could hit them on, the monopoly. You know, when you get a new phone, you get a computer, what is it? Google is always the default search engine, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's because Google uses its monopoly power. And for the big companies like Apple, they pay them a vig. They give them a percentage. And the little ones, it's like, we're going to kill you and not even let you get out there unless you do this. I mean, they're very, very nasty. And that's the reason why they dominate 95% of the searches. And this is just awful. So with this court decision, Google right now is, they're obviously going to go and appeal. All right. However, it took 4 years. The case was filed under Trump when he was.
Oh, wow. So it's been going for a while because they're so powerful. They stalled.
4 years. This case was filed just before the end of the Trump administration.
Right.
And it was, I guess, a hands off. They didn't mess with it. And it ran its course. So if it took 4 years to try this, it's a slam dunk. I think finding an issue on appeal, a procedural issue, after 4 years, I think is going to be pretty tough. Really, really tough. So they got to have a Hail Mary pass to do something else. But this is going to blow up. It's going to trigger a series of lawsuits. So they're going to go at Google, but they're going to go at Meta, and it's going to bring the house down. Now, the reason why this is why I just said, okay, I'm going to have to take a chance with my readers, and because there's just, it's too good not to lose. All right.
Yeah.
That I can take 3D concepts with a search engine with Perplexity, and that's a two-dimensional engine. All right. That's two-dimensional. But the point is that what the AI is doing is you're saying, you're answering a question and it's going out and constructing a narrative, an answer for you. And it's a hit or miss proposition.
Yeah.
And I will say, AI just does not have a flourish. It's very, very plain Jane stuff.
Well, and especially what they give the public, you know what I mean? I'm sure they're using, I heard Bill Gates, one of those AI things is called DALL-E or something like that. But they only have version like 3. And Bill Gates was saying, he was just talking normal. And he's like, well, you can pull it up in some AI thing like DALL-E 10. And so they're already using DALL-E 10, DALL-E 11, DALL-E 12, and they have us on 3.
Well, they're doing all that stuff, but this lawsuit, this decision by this judge is a real gift. And what I want to tell people, because I was in the business for 25 years, right? And in Silicon Valley, I worked for all the big names. I was a contractor, all right? Oracle, I did work with them, Sun Microsystems, Hewlett Packard, Lockheed Martin. I could go on and on, all right? Names it McAfee, names you would easily recognize.
Yeah.
And the thing is that now that everybody in the biz knows that Google is in deep kimchi, this is a very serious body blow. All right. And we've seen this before years ago with the breakup of AT&T, which is why you have cell phones that you can afford today.
Because yeah.
if that never happened, you'd still be, you'd be paying $300 a month for, you know, a second generation smartphone. They would have held it back that much. And wow. so competition does a lot. And what I'm seeing, what is going to draw people, if they no longer are up against monopoly power, now it's whoever's got the best mousetrap. Mm-hmm. All right. And the best mousetrap is going to do the best for whoever the user is. It's going to favor the user. It's not going to favor the system. And so I see this decision and the emergence of AI assisted answer engines as a perfect fusion at the right time and moment. This is a massive event.
Yeah, right? It's scary.
And it's going to then spur these AI assisted answer engines to, they're going to have to compete with each other. And now the market is going to decide what it wants. Well, people don't want political bullshit.
Yeah. Right? They're
unless
fed
there's
up.
Some, you know, unless they've got reruns of The View on 24/7. Right? And then why do you need the internet? But the thing is, I see this opening up a lot, and I want to show folks how to use these three-dimensional time jump concepts applied to a two-dimensional AI environment so that you're going to be able to start really disclosing and finding things that have been hit. Because that is, if one thing we've learned with this Marxist revolution that we're fighting in America, if you want to steal a man's future, you must first cheat him of his past.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And they go in and
destroy the history, wipe out the history books.
Yeah, they sponge all kinds of stuff. It's awful. It's awful what they do. And because I can remember, I started using the internet back in, I think, 1993.
Uh-huh.
All right. Back in the old days when we were using stuff like Gopher. Boy, that should take you back. All right. And this was, I think the first browser was Netscape. And it was a nice little browser. All right. I'll never forget when Yahoo came out, everybody was going, oh, it's going to be Yahoo forever. Then along came Google. It was a better mousetrap. All right. And the market went with the better mousetrap.
Yeah.
So this stuff that Microsoft is doing, I don't. Yeah. If they're going to develop tools for their own end of the world, Orwellian, you know, let's murder and slaughter. What? They're not going to do it. They're going to do it. Of course, they're doing it. The Department of Defense is doing it. They're using artificial intelligence to kill people. But what I am seeing now, though, is this emerging opportunity for the diggers like you, that this U.S. versus Google decision is going to put a crack in the dam. Mm-hmm. And there are new tools that are coming out that are going to move it in the direction of AI search and answer. Mm-hmm. All right. And I think Google's got a lot of bad garbage. A lot of people are really tired of Google. All right.
Yeah.
And what they do, they don't, it's not like they have all kinds of people that are going, oh my God, they're wonderful. Leave them alone. Don't touch a hair on their head. You know, they serve us so well. No, we know it's intrusive. They want to know everything.
Everything.
That's right. I'm waiting for Google to come out with webcam toilet seats.
Oh, so, guaranteed. They already have that. Yeah.
So that Kamala could be assured that America has enough fiber in its diet, right? It's all that. So it's coming with the freedom wave. And I'm I'm putting this together. I see some real amazing opportunities, and I want to be able to take stuff and run with it, because there's a lot of history that's in the search engines. What's been lost is a lot of the context. We have lost a lot of websites, small websites that provided wonderful context, pulling things together. Well, they have been suppressed and kicked off, deplatformed, inspected, rejected, neglected, and detected. You know, they've done it to them. Well, now we're going to have this emergence of competition in search for answers. And if someone is doing this, it gives you a way to ride the wave.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're going to stay right on the, you're going to be in the tube, hanging 10, you know, you're going to be shooting the tube. And that's what I want to give people, is the ability to take this, a few simple 3D concepts with this two-dimensional AI powered tool to start pulling things together. Because when, you know, there are, with AI, I would say there are stupid questions and there are equally stupid answers.
Yeah.
But if you have good questions, the AI is going to feed you stuff that you need. And what you're looking for is, you don't want the AI to give you the construct, the whole assembly. Because it's not going to do that. It's not capable of, it hasn't, what's commercially available hasn't gotten to that point. But that's, and I don't know that it will for some time, because this is a very human, very creative process, all right? And, but if you know your commutative, your process, your three-dimensional process using events, threads, triggers, and spots, and then you apply that with this two-dimensional tool, you're not going to get a final assembly. What you're going to get is the AI is going to drop a big pile of Legos on your work desk, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, you've got to go sort it out and hook them up and create the context three-dimensionally, all right? But so that's what AI does. If you can use it with this, it's a Lego generator. And all you got to do is start snapping your Legos together. Now, there's things it's not going to find, because what the answer engine is limited to. But that is going to change over time. As competition, as the Google monopoly is shattered and competition starts coming back into the market, I think we're going to see some amazing stuff. And that you're going to be able to go in and not only reconstruct history, but in a personal way that connects to people, events, times, places, even though they're, you know, it's you can't put them all on the same calendar, right?
Now, AI is, we have about 10 minutes left. We're with Marshall Masters. Everyone can go to his website. The link's down below in the description to get you to his latest article that he's talking about right here, the Magador Maneuver. You know, there are dangers of AI, obviously. And, you know, like in the Terminator, the Skynet, they told everyone, you know, we need Skynet for security and all this. But then eventually AI basically found humans as a threat somehow. It found a way that it could tell itself, well, it could justify humans were a threat. And once it did that, it had to protect itself against humans. So it had to war with humans. Do you think that's a possibility? And you know, what's your take on that?
With artificial intelligence, whatever you're going to get will be an image of its creator.
Mm-hmm.
If it is created by a good and noble person with good values, all right, who wants to create a useful tool that's going to be helpful to people. That is going to translate into the AI. Mm-hmm. The problem is nobody wants to pay for that. They want AI that kills, steals, and hurts people. Okay. And if, you know, if you're going to create AI, and my concern with AI is something that I got in a reading with the guides. And I said, what do you think about artificial intelligence? And then this was multiple times. And the answer was always, it never ends well.
Yeah.
AI never ends well.
Yeah.
And so the question is would we be able to have AI, when it reaches singularity, its consciousness, that instead of viewing us as a threat or something, it needs to, whatever its crazy mission is, that it decides that it's going to be a good entity. It's going to do the right things.
Uh-huh.
And it's not going to be a mindless, you know, imperial stormtrooper. And that's what I would hope for the AI. But right now, it's a tool. Whether you use it or not, it's out there. It's out there. And it's being used. And it is, this whole thing is still in its infancy. I mean, you're going to find when you start doing this that there are things that you do with the search engine and then things you do with Perplexity.
Uh-huh.
And if you just need, you know, I need a date, you know, what date did this happen? Go to a search engine. I use Brave. And on the other hand, when you're starting to dig into history, human events, things that are going on, now you start using the AI. And if you're using these 3D, three-dimensional concepts.
Yeah.
All right. Which are, connects everything at the speed of thought.
If we got a caller. What's up? You're on the air. Who's this?
Yo, it's Kevin.
Hey, glad Kevin.
I've been trying to call in. I just wanted to ask Marshall Mathers his take on all the strange weather that we've had around the planet. Could there be a planet coming in? I just want his take. I'll take it off air, Shepard.
All the strange weather and activity. Marshall, they want to get your take on that real quick because they know you do earth changes.
Excellent question, caller. Yes. And if you go to my website, if you look at the top, you'll see Planet X FAQ. I also have a little ad on the left-hand side, and it's for newbies. There are 10 videos I produced, about 8 to 10 minutes each. Mm-hmm. The first four really are for the newbies, those that are new to it. For those that you've been following Planet X for some time, you'll still get some information that's useful, but you want to watch it so that you know how to recommend it and use it with people who are going to be coming into awareness. And they're finally going to come to you and go, well, I hate to admit it, but you're right, asshole. You know, and they're doing that nonsense. It's like, fine, go watch the videos and don't bother me. But from number five on, it's for the more advanced folks. And number five is pole shift. So to your caller, I actually answer your question, sir, with very detail. Because the pole shift is not a future event. The pole shift is happening now. It started in 2020.
Yeah,
we're doing okay.
It feels like it that we're in a pole shift right now, to me. You
it
know?
Is the beginning of it, and what's happened is Nemesis has a core lock on Earth on its inner core, and I explain all that in my video. So do catch my FAQ.
Take the access and start pulling it like this or something like that, kind of, or something, or is it locking? The core from spinning, or like, what do you mean by core locking?
All right. you have the inner core is solid, mm-hmm. and then the outer core, it's somewhat fluid, and that's what generates our magnetic shield. All right.
Okay.
And the inner core, basically metal, solid.
We got another caller with us. Caller, okay. What's your name?
Hi, this is Agent Jocelyn.
Hi, what's up, Jocelyn? How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, thank you. And fascinating conversation, really enjoying the show. This one really hits the jackpot. But I have a quick kind of additional comment based on what Kevin just said. I agree. I have really felt that the magnetic poles, you know, have gone underway, and that's the real explanation for all the shifting. I don't think it's so much the dues or, you know, HAARP. I mean, there's still probably some of that at play for the political aspect, you know, in the States, but I really think it has more to do with the magnetic shifting. But here's something that I have come to realize, and it really hit me hard today. They have really been pushing these huge mega cruise ships. They've been out for, you know, now they're even expanding them larger. They can, some of them can hold up to 7,000 people. So I'm wondering, you know, when we become water world, if they're going to really be using these as just, you know, survival mode luxury out there on the high seas until things calm down at some point. And I was just kind of wondering what Marshall thinks about that.
Actually, I wrote about that in one of my books years back, and about that is exactly what you said. It's like these are floating rescue ships. I don't know what they're going to do with them.
That's scary if you think about it.
Your callers, her instincts are really good. And
also, remember, you know, they had the...
And I'm glad you're enjoying it there.
They were rounding up these ships too, and I thought that was weird, like a test run, how to control them or something. They were bringing them to military bases and disembarking people and stuff like that.
Look, our government has...
We try to normalize things sometimes, so getting us used to these gigantic ships, and how many of those could they have out on the ocean without becoming like bumper cars, but it would kind of cover all that, because you could have literally many more thousands of people on these things, and that would be, you know, probably the elites and the powerful and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's just interesting that all of a sudden now, with all these anomalies in the weather, that these big mega ships are really being, you know, put out there as just a recreational thing. But I think some of us might know better.
Yeah, it's and you're sensing it actually. We're seeing reports all around the world of anomalous weather, hot weather. I'm living in Maine, and I'm wondering, did I move to Louisiana? You know, because it's just awful. We have heat, humidity, and pollen, and it's like from midnight to 4 a.m. It used to be. People could just in the summer open a window and sleep like a baby. And now, man, no, it's miserable. But I'm talking to folks around the country and overseas. And all of this is going on. And this really goes back to the previous caller when he's talking about the ongoing pulse shift. And it's causing it, because the inner magnetic core of the planet is off center. A good way to think about what's happening under the skin of the planet is with the inner core. It's like a washing machine when the load is out of balance, you know, and it starts going whoompa, 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 and it starts doing that. It's like, you know, okay, stop it, redistribute the load. Well, that's essentially what's happening with the Earth, is that Nemesis has achieved a core lock on the inner core of the planet. And so the inner core is responding to that gravitational pull, that tidal gravitational force, but also there's energy coming from Nemesis. And so between the gravitational pull and this bizarre, mysterious energy that's coming out of Nemesis, the core of the planet has changed. The shape of the planet has changed. The north and south of the planet are a little squished closer together, and the middle is more bulged out, and the inner core is off center. And it's not going to get better. It's going to get much worse.
Do you think that's why they've had some trouble with air travel lately and they're recalibrating the GPS and all that?
It's going to be causing, yeah. I mean, they already announced that. They said that we think the core of the planet is either stopped spinning or reverse direction. Yeah. It's in a that's movement crazy. Change. I was, when, you know, I'm going, what? You know, the... We don't talk to nobody.
And then they act like they don't know what's causing that. They act, they have all these reasons for it, but it's obvious it's Nemesis, you know?
Yeah, it's Nemesis. It's like, if you're on my site, YOWUSA, go to, I did an interview with Michael Deacon, and we did it on my Telegram channel where I collect all the Two Suns in the Sky observations. And when you get there, you can watch that, and but also you can go to my Telegram channel, Yowza Observations, and you can see it. It started out as a little research thing, and it's really kind of starting to take off. People are much more interested. I keep a tight grip on it. I don't let it get flooded with all kinds of chatter, and I've been dealing with trolls and deep state operatives for 20 years. And when I see them, you know, I give them the zots, and I let them know that they're not going to get past first base.
Yeah.
So I keep those people off. And I have some wonderful posters on that channel. One gentleman is a professor and he's Iranian. And I really like his stuff. We have new people coming in. Check it out. You're going to see a whole lot of Two Suns in the Sky videos. That's what I'm really doing. And I like to get stuff from 2023, 2024. There's, you know, sometimes people come in with interesting things, not necessarily a sun observation, two sun observation, but I like it, so I leave it. And if I don't like it, you know, it goes, I want to keep it clean so newbies come in, they don't have to go through tons of ridiculous chit-chat that, you know, has, and other than to, you know, oh, yeah, you're right, cool, you know, and all this stuff, affirmations. So do check it out, and you sound like someone who'd really enjoy it. I also have another one called Yowza Awareness, and this is more of the touchy-feely side of Planet X. And what's coming in the pole shift.
Anything else?
Well, Jocelyn? I kind of have the gut instinct that we're going to see that future Navy map come to life sooner rather than later. And lastly, I want to get out of here so other people get a chance to call in. But I'm just wondering what your take on Elon Musk is, and if you think he's going to achieve any of his Mars dreams, or that's just not even possible.
You know, frankly, who's to say he hasn't already done it?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like if I were going to start a religion based on modern events, it would be the faith of the last to know.
I feel like they're not doing Mars missions through space travel, but through like jump rooms or pyramids that exist, and they figured it out, or stargates or something like that. But who knows? Yeah. You know, there's the Van Allen radiation belt and all that.
Yeah, we have a lot of things. We're coming into a period of great revelation, and the floodgates are going to open, and we're going to learn that we have enemies we never knew we had. We're going to learn we have friends we never knew we had, and we're going to learn history that we never knew we had. And
that kind of ties into Antarctica. Do you think we'll ever learn the truth about what they've kept hidden from us down that way?
Well, it's starting to heat up.
All Nazis must die.
It's 20 to 40 degrees warmer down there now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I bet those,
they're going to thaw it out and probably all live down there.
That's tanning weather for Nazis. Yeah, the Nazis have a huge base down there.
Yeah, they're loving it right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fantastic show today, Shepard. Thank you so much, and I hope other people call in, too. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Jocelyn. Have a good one. We'll, if anyone wants to call real quick. If not, I got to get out of here. 262-891-0070. The number's on the screen, 262-891-0070. The show goes live every day on YouTube and Rumble around 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. It also archives on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's been ranked as high as number 66 this year on Apple Podcasts. Creeping in on TMZ Live, a corporation that has about $50 million. So interesting stuff. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this out. Hit the bell and get the notifications. Marshall, you want to say anything in closing?
Yes. Guys, moving forward, we're going to see some scary stuff. We're going to see some amazing stuff. And here's what you got to remember about survival. First, you always got to expect deep kimchi. It's always going to be there. All right? Don't get complacent. And then survival is less about holding on to things and more about holding on to each other.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good point. Good point. Well, we'll get out of here for today. See y'all later. That was the Shepherd and Bell Show. Sorry for the echo in the beginning. We got it fixed by mid-show. We got it fixed, apparently. So.
Oh, good.
Total nightmare, but we'll be back again. We'll have you on again, Marshall. Thanks so much.
Thanks, bro.
Shepherd Ambola Show. Share it out. Tell everyone about it. Don't forget to support the broadcast. The link's in the description below. Thank you.